With you again. I hope all is well in ISKCON Soweto. I hope things are developing in ISKCON Soweto. You're having Sunday programs, are you?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Yes, I'm just waiting to have a center.
Oh, I see, I see. I thought you were going to do it here.
Well, the idea was put forward to the to go with that with other groups, but it was felt that the neutral vision.
So you're looking around, is it? Found anything interesting?
What we're looking for now is the house with the garage, so that we can have yoga and programs. So the house that we're finding now is just there. The house is with the garage. But we're still in the
Okay. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Anyway, you know, I don't come up here so much. I've got too many places to go. And I know you had a program on Wednesday. Or were you in...
You went
to Lanesha. So I hope we're not sort of overdoing it, overloading you, over-programming you. Yeah. But here we are. So I was asked to say something about finding a balance between our sort of material life, I guess you'd say, or material responsibilities and our Krishna consciousness. And I thought a good way to start would be to read three verses from Ishapanishad. I don't know if many of you have read the Ishapanishad. It's very interesting, but particularly the first three verses, beginning with what is called the invocation, and then verse 1 and verse 2, they're dealing with this sort of subject. Anyway, I'm sure you'll pick up on it as we read. I'll read the three verses, then I'll read maybe just a few excerpts from the purports, just to kind of fill out the picture. So this is now the invocation. Very famous verse, actually. Om Purnam Ada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole. Even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Okay, so let's read verse 1. This is also a very famous verse. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magrida kasyas vidanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Okay, that was verse 1. This is now verse 2. And it's not well known like these other two I just read, but it's very important and very interesting. Kurvan eveha karmani jijivashech chitam sama evam twai nanyateto sti nakarma lipyate nare. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of life will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. Okay, those are three verses. And I just read a couple of little excerpts from the purports by Srila Prabhupada. This is now from the invocation, the first verse we read. Oh, and I should have mentioned, see our devotees here, our small devotee. This is Karuneshwari. She has come up to visit you from Durban. Seriously. And she brought her parents with her. Really, I'm not joking at all. I mean, particularly, I'm not joking that they came from Durban to visit you. Yes, it's a fact. Okay, anyway, let me just read here. Because we do not know that there's a complete arrangement in nature for our maintenance, we make efforts to utilize the resources of nature to create a so-called complete life of sense enjoyment. Because the living entity cannot enjoy the life of the senses without being dovetailed with the complete whole, the misleading life of sense enjoyment is illusion. The hand of a body is a complete unit only as long as it is attached to the complete body. When the hand is severed from the body, it may appear like a hand, but it actually has none of the potencies of a hand. Follow the idea. It's a good one, isn't it? It's a good one. Did you ever hear anyone say, "Can you lend me a hand?" Say, "Oh, you want a hand? Okay. Yeah. take it. Give it back when you finish. Anyway, I like that example. And let me anyway, I'll read another couple of excerpts. Let's see now, what was it? Yeah. Okay, yes. And it's all interesting. I would suggest that you all, when you get a chance, you read the whole book, but read these three verses first and purports, because they're very relevant in regard to this type of subject sort of idea. Okay. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that except for the Lord, no one is a proprietor of anything. One should accept only those things that are set aside by the Lord as his quota. The cow, for instance, gives milk, but she does not drink that milk. She eats grass and straw, and her milk is designated as food for human beings. Such is the arrangement of the Lord. Thus we should be satisfied with those things he's kindly set aside for us. And we should always consider to whom those things that we possess actually belong. Okay. Yeah, let me just read. That was from the second verse, which is, well, they actually refer to as mantras, mantra one. So I'm going to, read one more paragraph, and it's from mantra two, which was the third verse we read. Factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruitive work. A conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification, for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment. And when this principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include his society, nation, or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names, such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, and humanitarianism. These isms are certainly very attractive forms of fruitive activity. But the Vedic instruction of Sri Upanishad is that if one actually wants to live for any of the above isms, he should make them God-centered. Hare Krishna. Please come in. Welcome. Relax. So, here's the last little bit I'll read. There is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist. a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided the one executes his activities in relation with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. So those just a few little sentences, paragraphs from the purports to the three verses we read. And it's very interesting. All three are interesting, particularly Mantra 1 and Mantra 2. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. And then, let me just read. Mantra 2. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So let's say a few words about that. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachayane Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastyutyade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakavacharibhyas Chakripas Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So how are you all doing? How are you all doing? Kunjani. Sapile. Sakona. You all understand Zulu or Southern Sotho better?
Both.
Both is okay, yeah? Okay. And when you have programs, what language do you speak in?
English.
You speak in English? Really? Okay. Why not? What do you normally speak at home?
Well, I'm Zona, so I speak Southern Sotho.
Why not Southern Sotho?
Well, I guess because we read the Bhagavad Gita in English, it's just a natural progression.
Okay. As long as everyone can manage. Okay, anyway, this is very interesting. Of course, you know, it's talking in kind of, you could say, simple terms, or like in terms of principle and not so much in terms of detail, like what to do, exactly how to do it, in terms of the subject, which is balancing our like material needs of the body and family with the spiritual needs of the soul, deeper needs, which I think, you know, I think we've all experienced by now, being involved in Krishna consciousness. I think we've all seen that if we don't address our spiritual needs enough, and if we just focus on our material needs, which, you know, we have to deal with, but if we focus too much, and particularly if we focus exclusively, as, you know, generally the people do, then its life becomes not very satisfying. Yeah. When I was young, let's say it was 1960, January 1965. Where were you in January 1965? In your previous lifetime. I was in Auckland, New Zealand, 1965. I was 13. Yeah, I was 13. So there was, in those days, a very, very famous musical group. They were called the Rolling Stones. They are still rolling. You've probably heard of them at least. They are real characters. Anyway, they came out with a song. It was top of the hit parade, top. And I actually, you know, I was not a devotee then. Yeah. Prabhupada had not come to America yet. January 65. Prabhupada was still thinking about it and organizing, getting ready. So I went and saw the Rolling Stones live in January 1965, and they sang that very famous song. You know what it's called? I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Did you ever hear that song? Not? Okay. You didn't miss much. But that's what he says. I can't get no satisfaction, and I tried, and I tried, and I tried, but I can't get no satisfaction. And you know those guys, they're still singing, they're still carrying on, and they still haven't got satisfaction. Because if we focus, particularly if we focus completely, that even if we just focus too much, not completely, but you know, our balance is not good, then we won't be satisfied. And you really feel it. You really feel it. And it's really not nice. It's really unpleasant, and it's like disturbing. So these three verses, it's the invocation and mantra 1 and mantra 2, which we read. They're giving like a basic formula in principle, in simple terms, for how we should try to get a balance in our lives. And the first thing is to recognize that the Lord is the proprietor. Actually, there's another verse, it's in Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada called the peace formula. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's 527. Let me just read that one while we're at it. And it's related. I'll just read. Oh, where is it? 529, sorry. I'll just read the translation. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So first step, if we want to get a balance and then keep a balance once we've got it, first thing is to recognize that the position of Krishna, position of the Lord, he's the proprietor. We are not, and we won't be, and we cannot be. And to whatever degree we try to be, or even dream of being, like independent enjoyers, to that degree, life is not going to work so well. I mean, it'll carry on, but it's not going to work like nicely. So that's the first thing, to recognize the position of the Lord and to recognize our dependence on the Lord, and then at least try to understand, try to see, sort of develop that vision. It's like looking through glasses in a sense. When you get old like me, and would you believe it? I was your age once. I'm surprised to hear that. I was your age too, once. And I didn't need glasses. At least to read now, I need glasses. And when you put on the glasses, it's like, wow. You must know too. It's really different. Yeah, it's really different, right? Where am I? Oh, I'm in Soweto. So, you know, Prabhupada made the point we read in one of the paragraphs of the one of the purports. Prabhupada said that it's like in the beginning to just be fully Krishna conscious and just to give up material life, and it's not so easy to do. And it's not recommended that you try to do it, because it's just, you know, it takes time. Anything, any kind of serious thing in life, like getting a university degree or learning some, you know, some more complicated type of work, all these things take time, and Krishna consciousness takes time. But it begins. Hare Krishna, welcome too. Come in. How to say come in Southern Sutta?
Yeah.
Sena. Huh?
Sena.
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 Sena. Sena. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Sapile. Gakona. So, right. But we should try to cultivate. In this regard, I was saying, like, you know, vision and having glasses and seeing things differently. We should try to cultivate knowledge and then try to see through, like, the glasses of knowledge. And then, you see, things are sort of fuzzy and, you know, I definitely can't read. But then, oh, okay, now I can read. It's clear, it's very clear. So, we should try, one, we said, to recognize the position of the Lord and His proprietorship. And then when we look at the world, try at least to cultivate that type of vision of knowledge. That, you know, how people are working hard and trying to get ahead, and but it's difficult. And even those people who do actually become very successful, there's not so many, but some, they become very successful. They get lots of money and, you know, all things that money can buy. So if you watch those people, if you look at them through the, you know, the glasses, the eyes of knowledge, then you see even those people, they're struggling. It's not that. You know, sometimes we give the example, it's a good example, that if the amount of happiness you experience, you know, maybe level one, then double is level two and three and four different levels. If the level of happiness that you experience is equal or, say, proportionate to the quantity of money you have, then you would expect someone who has, like, shall we say, 1,000,000 rands to be 1,000 times happier than a person who has 1,000 rands. You follow? Proportionate. And a person who has 1,000 rands to be 1,000 times happier than someone who has 1 rand. But you don't see it. You just don't see it. You really don't see it. If that was true, if this world actually worked in that way, then you'd have some people who, you know, like Bill Gates and whoever these people are, you know, and who, I don't know who's the richest person in South Africa, but who's the richest person in South Africa? Cyril Ramaphosa. Who?
Patrice
Matshepe. He's the richest person, is he? Anyway, he would be so happy. Just so incredibly happy. Just, you know, wow. It would be out of this world compared to your sort of average person, Mr. Normal, in this world. You follow? But it doesn't work like that. It actually doesn't work like that. In fact, how it works, if you observe carefully, you know, you'll see, of course, I mean, not always, but, you know, it does happen. When people are very poor, then they may suffer more. Not always. Sometimes people who are very poor are actually quite happy. Yeah. So, but the sort of, you know, normal people who, they have some work, they have some income, they have a place to stay, and maybe they have a vehicle, and, you know, they've got these things, life is going on, and they're not under any heavy pressure to survive. So they have some level of happiness. And you'll see that those very, very Petris, right? Mm-hmm. Our friend, Petris. Is he from Soweto?
Mamelodi.
Oh, Mamelodi, okay. Should call in, drop in. Get a donation from him. But if you analyze, if you actually watch and observe and analyze, you'll see his experience of happiness is not greater than at least some average person. You know, I read in, was it CNN, one of these types of things, yesterday, a man in San Francisco died, his name, his nickname was the Hate Man. And you could look it up. It's interesting to read. Just yesterday I read it. He was a man. He had been a journalist with the New York Times. So, you know, his position was okay. But he just left it to live on the street. And he was homeless. He died, he was 80. He was homeless for like 45 years. And people tried to take him off the street. He refused. He always went back onto the street. And they called him the Hate Man because he would stand on street corners in the city, and as people walked by, he would scream at them, "I hate you. I hate you. I hate you." Anyway, you know, a bit odd, obviously, but he had opportunities to get off the street. He lived in, like, not even a proper tent, but just some sort of thing that he stuck up in a park. They call it the People's Park in San Francisco. And his relatives and people tried to take him out. He always went back. Because he felt he was happier there. Anyway, maybe that's a digression. But we should try to recognize or appreciate the Lord and accept within us that He is the Lord, He is the proprietor, and then try to observe what's going on around us and try and actually see what are these people experiencing. How do they feel? How do they feel? Yeah, in their lives. And then we'll see that this idea that there is sort of like a proportionate relationship between the amount of material facility you have and the amount of happiness you have, you'll see, this is fiction. This is not true. It is, you could say it's a lie, but it's definitely wrong. It's completely wrong. And there are many wealthy people who live in, you know, in great anxiety. Great anxiety. You know, when I was his age, I got into the youth culture. It was about 1962. There was no Beatles even yet. There was Elvis Presley. I was initially an Elvis Presley fan, and then the Beatles took over and the Rolling Stones. But Elvis Presley, he was one of these guys, you know, a few hundred million dollars devotees. That's more than all of us put together, right? I think it's many times more than all of us put together. But you know, he was struggling so much in life, and it's very interesting. So famous, so incredibly famous, and so wealthy, but so dissatisfied, he couldn't get satisfaction. You know how he got his happiness? He would eat. He would eat. He would sit down and just eat and eat and just eat and eat and eat until he just couldn't manage anymore. And then as soon as, you know, like after a few hours, as soon as possible, he just eat and eat and eat. He was, you know, we use this term, take shelter. He was, no, I'm completely serious. He was taking shelter of food. And as a result, you know, if you take shelter of food, you end up sort of the body can only deal with so much. And he ended up like a big bubble, sort of. Yeah. And he died under the influence of some drugs, sitting on a toilet. Hari Bol. What a way to go. It's pathetic. So we need, as we're trying to be or trying to become devotees and find, you know, become situated in Krishna consciousness and in life so we can manage the different aspects of our lives, we've got to accept the Lord as the proprietor, learn how to see things truly in the world and not become confused. You know, we see some Mr. Cool driving down the street in his black BMW with black windows. You know what I mean? And you may think, wow, he's cool. He's not so cool, really. Learn to see like this. This is called seeing through the eyes of knowledge. And then we have to try to, we have to chant, of course, and read the books and associate. But then we have to try to adjust our lives a bit. Like, Prabhupada, we read, I think, did we read? Maybe we didn't. But in this, the purport of Mantra 1, that about how there's a quota for everyone, a quota, which is set aside for you. So, you know, there's literally a quota in the sense of quantity of stuff which is set aside for us. And if we go beyond our quota and really try and accumulate, there is only like a fixed amount available, and it's divided into quotas. And if you take more than your quota, what are you doing? You're taking from someone else's quota. And that someone else is not going to be happy about it. And then there's going to be conflict, naturally. So there's a quota in terms of quantity. And for us, as devotees, you know, it may be a little difficult to calculate very precisely how much money, how big a house, what sort of car, what standard of, you know, furniture and all these clothes and all that. It may be hard to precisely calculate. But the basic idea is there, Prabhupada said on many occasions, simple living and high thinking. And not high living and simple thinking. And certainly not, you know, like high living and no thinking. Yeah. Yeah. So we have to use our intelligence and try and understand what is a sort of moderate, responsible kind of standard of living for us, and not extravagant, but not, you know, like it's going to be, we're going to be really short of things we need. That needs to be done. And by Krishna's grace, it's possible, basically. It's possible to arrange things in your life, in your, you know, with your house and all your material facilities, so that you've got what you need, and it's okay, it's nice, but it's not extravagant. Because extravagance means you're going to have to work more to get more money. And that's going to take time. It's going to take energy. and that, which is going to take away your time and energy for other things. Yeah. You know, sometimes devotees, over the years, a number of devotees have approached me, number of them, and said, look, I've been working in this company for some years. They've offered me a promotion. I'll get double the amount of money, or 50% more maybe, but, you know, maybe I'll have to work more and so on like that. What should I do? Well, there was one or two cases where I said, well, give it a try, see what happens. And you know what happened? They became so busy, they couldn't maintain their Krishna consciousness, and they couldn't even enjoy, to whatever degree you might enjoy, the extra money they're getting, because they don't have the time for it. So more recently, when devotees have asked me, and they do from time to time, about exactly this type of situation, I tell them, look, if you're earning enough and you're not under too much pressure right now, just stay where you are. Don't accept the promotion. And a number of them have done that, and they've come back to me and said, you know, we told the management this, and they said, you're crazy. But, you know, we stuck to it, and it was the best thing. So this is, you know, this is something practical in terms of balance. This is not just sort of philosophical. This is something practical. So there's the idea of quota in terms of quantity, but then there's quota in terms of quality in life. Like, you're probably aware that if people eat meat, it tends to be much more expensive than being vegetarian. It tends to be a lot more expensive. So you see, just by becoming a devotee and becoming vegetarian, you've simplified your life to some noticeable degree. And Prabhupada, you can read the purports when you get a chance. Prabhupada makes the point, oh, we read about the cow and her milk. The cow produces so much milk. The cow drinks no milk at all. An adult cow drinks no milk. They eat grass. So that milk, by Krishna's arrangement, that milk is for us. Doesn't mean the cows should be abused and exploited, but the milk is there for us. And other species, like, you know, the lions and tigers and so on, they're actually carnivorous. They actually eat only meat. They eat nothing else. They have particular type of physical structure, biological digestive system. It's designed for that. Our body is not designed for that. It has a different design. Yeah. In fact, our body on a, you know, like structural level, the digestive system is typical of the digestive system of a vegetarian animal. It's typical. Typical. Long intestine, you know, a number of times longer than the size of the body, the height of the body. Like 10 times, or I think in human beings, 16 times. Whereas carnivorous creature, the intestine is roughly the length of the body. So So this is now talking about a quality of life. What we actually do in our lives, standard of living like that. So if we adjust our lives like that, then you'll find your expenses can come down, your free time can increase, and you'll be feeling fresher, and you can utilize your time and energy in Krishna consciousness and give yourself really a deeper satisfaction, and that's good. And you know what the ideal standard is? Listen to this. This may sound like a joke. Some of you are going to laugh. Well, let's see. The ideal situation is you work as little as possible and you get as much money as possible. See, he laughed. That might sound like a joke, but it's not a joke. It's not a joke. You know, we have one devotee, Ambarish Prabhu. He came, he's been here a couple of times. You may have seen him from the Ford family. He's the richest devotee in ISKCON. He's the most wealthy devotee in ISKCON. We don't know how much money he has, but it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah, it's in that sort of area. And you know how much he works? Almost zero. Almost zero. Yeah. But then look at me. Here I am. Would you believe, devotees, listen to this, I have not worked. The last time I worked was, it may have been, I can't really remember exactly, but it was sort of in the middle or early 1972. Then I retired. So that's 45 years. Seriously, I'm not joking. I have not worked. I have not been paid one single cent in 45 years. And look, I'm still alive. I have not starved to death yet. In fact, the difficulty is not shortage of food. It's too much. Really, it's a fact. And because we're engaging in Krishna's service, not everyone will be able to do like that. And we don't expect, and we would definitely not encourage people to try to do like that, unless, you know, in certain particular cases where there are certain factors which are suitable. But otherwise, for people, particularly people who are married people, or people who want to go down that path of household life, then, you know, these types of questions, they become more relevant. They become very relevant. So, but what you must do, try to appreciate Krishna as the proprietor and develop a consciousness of Krishna, how he works, how he's working behind the material nature, how things are working under his control, a consciousness, an awareness of Krishna. And then try and cultivate that vision of seeing more clearly what is going on out there, what is really going on, and try to see through. There is a sort of like a veil, you could say. And when you look through the veil, then on the other side, it looks very nice. and the veil is the best term. It's like looking through a glass, and you see on the other side, it makes it look really nice, but you take away that, and then you see more clearly what's really going on. So try to sort of cultivate that vision of not being enamored by the material world and, you know, all the trappings of opulent material existence. Try to live a simple but responsible, decent life. But try to avoid extravagance and the entanglement which comes when extravagance is there. And then really, you know, with your work, don't get sucked into one of these jobs where you got to just work and work like an animal, like a monkey or like a dog. But where you've got, you get enough to live, okay, but you've got enough time and energy to actually focus on your deeper needs, which means that every morning you should get up as early as reasonably possible and have a Krishna conscious morning program before you go off to work or your business or whatever you're doing. Have a nice morning program which prepares your consciousness so that when you're in the workplace dealing with the situations and the people, you have that strength behind you that you're not going to sort of, you know, become too much influenced, affected by them. Yeah. Like listening to all their opinions about life and what they did over the weekend and, you know, they like this and they don't like that and all these things. Try and keep clear of that as much as possible. Keep to yourself at work. Don't get sort of entangled with them. Yeah. So this is better if you can get up early in the morning and have a nice morning program. It is better than getting up later and just going to work and then coming back and then having an evening program where you are now trying to recover, save yourself from what you've been put through during the day. Of course, you should have an evening program also. Anyway, if you have a morning program, you should also have an evening program. But the idea that we just get up and go to work, and then after work, then we try and pull ourselves together. This is like, from the spiritual point of view, it's like a loser's program. Yeah. But a winner's program is to make that effort to get up early, have a decent morning program, then go and you can deal with things. Yeah. So these are all some ideas about how to balance things so that you can live okay. You don't have to live like a poor person in one room. You don't have to live like that. You can live nicely. Yeah. But keeping the balance and keeping a spiritual focus. Yeah. And then if your consciousness is strong when you go out into the working world every day, then not only will you not be so much affected by the people and their complaints and their this and that and their opinions and politics and you know, what do you think of Mr. Zuma? Let's not talk about it. You know, all this stuff which is just going on. But if your consciousness is stronger, you'll be able to be more successful because you'll be stronger. You'll be able to think more clearly, take advantage of situations better, see what to do more clearly to be successful. Yeah. Let me just close. I'll finish now. I'll just tell you one little story. There was this man in Bombay, India, who passed away actually about 2 or 3 years ago, maybe. He was a really nice man. And he, back in like the very early 70s, when Prabhupada went back from America to India and started doing some preaching programs, he saw Prabhupada in a big program in Bombay. He was very impressed, extremely impressed. And he went to meet Prabhupada the next day or day after. So he met Prabhupada and they're talking. And Srila Prabhupada asked him, "What is your program?" And the man said, "Well, I'm in construction. I build blocks of flats." He was big, big man. "I build blocks of flats." And Prabhupada said, "No, no. No, I mean, what is your spiritual program?" Prabhupada said, "What is your morning program?" Morning program. And the man, his name was Mr. Setty. Mr. Setty said, "Well, I get up, I have a cup of tea, I look at the newspaper, I go to the office. That's my morning program." You know what Prabhupada said? "Brace yourselves. Are you ready? Fasten your seatbelts." Prabhupada said, "Oh, I see. Then, what is the difference between you and a pig?" That's heavy, isn't it? Can you imagine? First meeting. What's the difference between you and a pig? But this man, Mr. Setty, he was a very sincere person. And instead of just, you know, thinking like, "Oh, you know, how could you say that?" He thought, "Wow, really?" And he thought about it, and he understood, it's true. It's true, actually. Yeah. And then he adjusted his life. And he was never initiated, actually. But he was very close to Prabhupada, very close to the devotees, and did huge amounts of service in Bombay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay. Put on glasses. Aha, okay. So now?
Hare Krishna, dear devotees. I would just like to thank Maharaj for coming to visit us for the second time around. And Maharaj is coming all the way from Victoria, so let's please give Maharaj a big Hare Bol for that. And we'd also like to thank Maharaj for such an illuminating and wonderful class. I think what stood out for me was that number one, Krishna is the proprietor of everything, and that everyone has a particular quota that has been set for him. And the third thing was, well, I've kind of forgotten. The fourth thing was that really stood out for me was that we have to have a winner's program. So get up in the morning, chant our rounds before we go to work, and that way we will have a more fulfilling life. Or the third thing was that our happiness is not really dependent on how much money we have. And it's true, we've seen in the world that people with lots of money take shelter of drugs, you know, things like that, so that they're not truly happy. So we're very fortunate in the sense that we've got the greatest treasure, which is chanting the holy names of Krishna, and it really fulfills us. So I think especially for us in Solitude, let's really take that to heart and really practice. meditation and consciousness. We'd also like to thank the devotees that have come from far and wide, from Durban. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. And the local devotees who support the program. I think now we can have kirtan, and then after that we'll have Krishna. Thank you so much.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.